Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andy Shea. Andy, how we doing?
Hanging in there, Jim. Football season. It's the middle of August. It's football season.
It is. We actually get to talk about what's actually going on in the field, on the practice field, talking about the team itself. And I thought today we could talk about, Andy, every year the Big Ten Network goes camp to camp, okay? And you get an hour show on each individual team. And it's always been a pretty good source of information. They get full access, or at least probably better access than most folks in the media do. And so I'm always anxious to see the show. And I always want to see more what the national feeling is about, you know, Penn State. I know you and I both scheduled ourselves to make sure we saw it. Just an overview on the show itself.
Boring. You know, they didn't usually they give you, you get some sort of information. Look, they're there one day, right? Like they watch practice, they have a little bit more access, but it's still one day. So I'm not expecting, you know, for them to be jumping off the high dive and, you know, giving you all kinds of information that you need. I think it's twofold. One, I don't think they did a very good job. I'm just going to say it was not very well done. They had great access to players, and all they just kept doing was lobbing them puffy, you know. I'm not talking try and put them on the spot questions, but I'm like, ask them what they think about this or that football-wise. So they didn't do a very good job, in my opinion. But they gave you access to a lot of, you know, Penn State, you get a lot of access to the players. You got the head coach, offensive coordinator, multiple players. You got the quarterback, the running back, the two, you know, couple studs on defense. They had a lot of access. They didn't do anything, but, you know, you got a bigger picture, and they do give you a snapshot of what it looks like. From the outside looking in, we're a little more inside looking out. They're very much on the outside looking in. And so from that perspective, you're 100% right. They give you sort of what the, you know, 30-second elevator pitch is on Penn State going into 2026.
And I don't know if part of the issue with them is that now the Big Ten has 18 teams in it. That's a lot of teams to cover.
Yep. I don't buy that. I think if it was 10, I don't think they'd even do a good job. It just doesn't seem like they've been at this a long time. The three guys, you know, Revson, who's really good, you know, DiNardo and the next player, they've been at this a long time. This isn't their first rodeo. So it just doesn't seem like they kind of dug in very deep. They just sort of took what was given to them. And it is. I mean, there was some stuff to be learned. It was, you know, it was cool to see and hear from the players. They didn't say very much of what I would call interest. They did answer the questions that were asked of them. They just, you know, it seemed like the toughest interview or the most in-depth interview was when Revson sat down with Anton Lynn, right? But Lynn's a five-word guy. Like, his answers are all five words. So you got like 15 different questions, and that's just who Lynn is. That's just the way he's always been, even when he was a player. Ask question, get direct, sort of simple, short answer. He was the interview that I enjoyed the most because he sort of forced Dave to keep, you know, digging and digging and, you know, keep going to the well to ask another one. Keep going to the well to ask another one. Because, you know, we got 3 or 4 minutes with you. And Lynn's not a big answer guy. Matt Campbell, deep, thoughtful, intriguing kind of answer guy. You know what I mean? That's the way he is. That's not your defensive coordinator. So I found that his interview be a little bit revealing and fascinating.
Well, the couple things I'll say about it is, first of all, it's tough to interview players if you're looking for big time news, okay, or revelations about the team. Correct. They are trained not to give you that. Now, I've had the good fortune, because of some of these events we've been doing through the summer, to interview 20 players, okay, pretty good sampling. And we get about 15 or 20 minutes with each player, so much longer than what they did there. And, I kind of pride myself on asking questions that they wouldn't normally be asked. And they're more insights into the person than they are what's right. going on in the field, because that's such a tough thing to do, to get news or insights. But where I thought it fell short of where it was in the past, it felt like in the past, not so much in the interviews, but maybe something they found out off camera that they then share with you. I don't know if you remember years ago when there was actually a three-way fight for the quarterback position, and out of nowhere, true freshman Rob Bolden got the job. And, he got the starter job.
Oh.
And it was on this particular show that I found out that that's a possibility. And you know how Joe Pod did not want to play true freshman, especially at quarterback. So there was actually something, and it wasn't something that was said on the air. You knew they found it out elsewhere, and then they shared it. So there was nothing like that. The other thing that I like in watching this is, as I mentioned, you kind of get the national picture as what is the opinion of the team. I thought it fascinating and accurate. One of the first things they brought up was the schedule. And that I agree with, Andy. That is a major talking point for this team this season.
It should be the biggest talking point and asset. They have the ideal scenario. Jerry said it. He goes, you couldn't have scripted this and written it and put it together any more perfect for Matt Campbell and the new staff, with all of this transition, with the way it went down with James Franklin, with the 2025 team falling on its face and going over the side of a cliff. Terry Smith kind of reestablished. You know, you could not have scripted this any better. It's perfect. Not one of the three. Okay, if you had one, you'd still be like, they have a favorable schedule. They don't have to play any of the three teams that are ranked inside the top five or top six or seven nationally from the Big Ten. That's massive, because at that level, with where Penn State's at in its transition in this roster right now, and we will get to it, one of the things Matt Campbell said that I like the most and is true and revealing and college football fans need to embrace this, we'll get to it. But one of the things I liked was right now, and this team, the way it's constructed and the way its roster is set up, there are three teams that they would be massively behind the eight ball against. It would be, in terms of talent, massively behind, Jimmy. Like miles. Like two touchdowns behind. Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana. The gap might not be as big for Indiana. Indiana seems to be the defending national champion, seem to be either the team you're buying into or the team you don't think is going to do it again for a third time, right? Like they're not going to re-validate. So, but they're still massively talented. Penn State doesn't play any of those. There is some marginal talent where you could make an argument. They're like at a 60-40 talent-wise. They're a little bit behind. That's a fair fight. That's a fair fight. So the schedule, including the embarrassing non-conference schedule, which is just gross, is perfect for where this team is at right now, with as much transition, as much transfers, new coaching staff, et cetera, et cetera. It should be the talking point. It should continue to be the talking point, because as the season moves along, it won't change. No Ohio State, no Oregon, no Indiana. That's not going to change.
A couple real quick things, sort of kind of going off topic just a little bit, and talking about those top three teams and Indiana. I don't think Indiana gets the same respect coming off as a national champion, because I think what you should respect, or what's more helps you predict the future, is Ohio State's been good, one of the elite teams for what, a decade and a half. Oregon has been really good for several years now. Indiana, it's been 2 years. You know, it's kind of like when Michigan won it all a couple years ago, they didn't become a perennial national contender, you know? Right. I think that's the difference with those teams. But I also saw, Andy, that they talked about with the schedule. To me, it's always been the three games, Washington, Michigan, and USC. Those are the three teams, as you put it, it's a fair fight talent-wise. They talked about playing, you know, Northwestern in their opener of the new stadium, and yep, starting with Wisconsin. Now, yep, I'm not saying they can't lose those games. Either one of them could be one of those kind of gotcha games. But I think they totally whiffed on, here's the three teams that, you know, there's a comparable talent, and they're probably going to be fighting with those three teams for a fourth or fifth playoff position in the conference.
I kind of disagree with you just a little bit, Jimmy. I think Northwestern and Wisconsin are those games. I say those are the games where Penn State's the 60 team and the opponent is the 40 team. They're going to have to play really well to win football games like that. They're not going to be able to play with a B- or a C+ effort and win games like that, Jimmy. They're just not going to be able to do it because of the talent gap. And we'll get into more of that. But, you know, I don't wholly disagree with you, just a wee little bit.
I get your point. And, you know, we're up against the clock here. So yep, I'll make my final point on that, Andy, right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We are talking about this, the Big Ten Network show about Penn State that was on earlier this week. And we were talking about, they mentioned Wisconsin and Northwestern when discussing the Penn State schedule. I think if Matt Campbell truly gets the best out of this team, or close to the best, there should only be three games where they're a threat to lose. They should win the other nine games, including Wisconsin and Northwestern. Now, if they start losing those kind of games, I'm putting some of that on Matt Campbell and his staff, okay? That means they didn't do as good a job as we think they can. So, again, as you put it, we differ just a little bit on that, Andy, not a lot. I can still see them lose to – they got to be careful in those games. But let's move on, talk about some of the other things. And they brought up – Rocco Beck, I guess they essentially said that he's the quarterback they need. Okay. And I think it's the idea that, and it's relevant. This is the most experienced quarterback in the country.
Yeah, he's got 39 starts, Jimmy. They needed, in this transition, Penn State needed uber stability at the quarterback. And they got it. It was, I don't think he's the best transfer they got from Iowa State. I think he was the most important transfer portal player that Penn State landed for 2026. And I don't even think it's close. You can make an argument for three or four guys for second, and it's not even close in terms of the importance. He's not the best football player. I'm not sure if he's an NFL quarterback. I want to see him in the Big Ten because they're going to test him. It is one of the two power conferences. It is not the Big 12. There are some things he's going to see that he's not used to. It's not that he hasn't seen it before, but he's not used to seeing it at this consistent of a level. And what does he have to counter that? But in terms of importance, stability, leadership, familiarity with the system, players in the locker room that are known that came along with the coaching staff from Iowa State, all of those factors, you wrap it up into a bow and you say, because it's the quarterback position, that's the most important transfer for Penn State for this one season during, you know, this one season, which is the transition honeymoon season.
And this is where we do agree 100%. And I believe that over the last couple of years, we've seen, you know, teams through the portal bring in that experienced quarterback. And it doesn't have to be the most talented. It doesn't have to be the guy who's the best NFL quarterback.
Correct.
But it's a guy who could lead your collegiate team. Another theme of the show that, again, I picked up on as a kind of the national story. Obviously, it's a story how many portal guys they brought in, how many portal guys they brought in from Iowa State. I mean, yep. We see this over and over again. James Franklin goes to Virginia Tech. He brings in a bunch of Penn State guys, current players, recruits. He brings them in. Kurt Cignetti goes to Indiana from James Madison. He brings guys with him. That's part of the process with a new coach. But what I think they overplayed was the it's the easy story. Oh, you have a bunch of Iowa State guys. You have a bunch of Penn State guys. So you're going to have two different cliques. And I'll admit, at the start of the off season when this all happened, that was the kind of questioning that I did with the players when I talked to them. But you know what? After the process, going through spring practice, I got the feeling that went away, Andy. Am I wrong or in feeling that way?
I don't think it was ever prevalent. I think you're right in that it went away. I don't think it was ever a prevalent problem or issue that Matt had to address, because you know what Matt did right away? I think, you know, your head coach, sometimes they set the tone, tenor, and message. It doesn't matter whether you came from Colorado, UCLA, Iowa State, or you were here at Penn State. When we got here, we are starting from the bottom. We are ground up. Yes, I bought 30-something guys that I'm familiar with me, but I'm also going to learn and get familiar with the 27 or 28 or whatever number it was guys that were here. And we are going to create opportunity based on competition. And if you see it any other way, then you're free to leave or let us know. And I think that sort of set the stage of like, yeah, I brought three receivers, two wideouts, and a tight end that had almost 100 catches last year, right? Are they my wide receivers and tight end? I know what I got, we got, but I'm saying no. And in other words, he said to the ones that were familiar with him and the ones that were new, we have to do this. And plus, Jimmy, on the defensive side of the ball, he had a new coordinator, right? He had a new coordinator on the defensive side of the ball. So He wanted him badly. The one thing that stuck out to me was how bad he wanted Lynn to be his DC. Like, he went after him. He went and shopped and said, I'm willing to pay for you. I want you here. And that kind of stuck out to me as well. But he had a new DC. So you can't do it on one side of the ball, Jimmy. You can't say, well, we got a new DC. So all you guys on defense got to earn your stripes. He had to do it across the board despite the familiarity. Probably the only position he didn't do it was quarterback. Let's be honest. That was probably the only off-the-table position, but I truly believe everywhere else, you know, hey, you're going to have to earn it. And that started in spring camp. And the players actually, when you hear a message and hear it delivered and then see it actually not just words but action, that's why it went away. Because the action and the words matched, and it never became something the players had to worry about.
And that's the right way for a coach to handle this, to talk about there's competition at each position. You got to prove it. You got to earn it every year, every position. The other word that was thrown around a lot, Andy, is culture. And I think every team talks about it.
Yeah, it's an old tired word.
I'm sure James Franklin talked about fixing the culture down at Virginia Tech, you know?
Sure.
So when a coach, Matt Campbell said it, Danton Lynn talked about culture. I think the only person on that show that mentioned culture that it stuck with me or had meaning was Tony Rojas, who's a holdover. He talked about the culture being different this year.
Well, yeah, I think the vibe is different because – so here's one thing. This is part of – this isn't like a, you know, rah-rah shish kabob type culture thing. I think Matt and this staff, and that's another reason why I went after Lynn so hard, I think more than anything else, and this was true at Iowa State, this was a very prevalent fact. The group of players, it doesn't matter what they will be very well coached. In other words, this will be a coached up football team. And that is a culture thing. Like, I think James was more of, James liked talent. James was drawn to talent. And he had a gift for identifying it and, for the most part, letting it shine. He couldn't get everybody on the bus last year, but he was pretty good at letting the talent shine. Penn State doesn't have a lot of shiny talent to flash at you. And Matt has always been, even back to his days at Toledo, as a head coach, if nothing else, we will be prepared and well coached. We might not win and we might not execute perfectly, but we're going to understand who we are, what we are, and what the expectations are, and it won't be any gray area. So I think more than anything, I think part of the culture, if you're talking about what Tony Rojas said, it was the coaching and sort of how we go about our business hour by hour on the practice field and day by day as players inside the program is different because the focus is on the little things and football, not letting the talent shine in big picture stuff. So I think if nothing else, you can take away from that show, this team will be instructionally very well coached. They won't be perfect. They won't be executing at an extremely high level per se, but they will be, for what they have and what is assembled, they will be very well coached.
I think so too. And I think there's also a difference in attitude a bit. Now, I think you described James Franklin well. And I think over time, he became a little distant from the team. You hear one player said something about he had never been upstairs in the Lash building, which is where James Franklin's office is. I didn't even know where the office was, kind of deal. This team and the coaches, they will tell stories about knowing the other coaches' families, knowing their kids. You hear stories from the coaches relating to the players. You know, this player's girlfriend babysits, you know, for one of the coaches, that type of thing. And you heard it from Taylor Mauser that, you know what, when he puts together his play schedule for the game, he talks to the players. He gave me, I'll talk to Rocco Beck and see what plays is he most comfortable with. What does he want as that first play, that first pass that will get him going? And there seems to be more relationship building.
I found it interesting that he said that's the OC you're talking about. He didn't want to be anywhere near Matt. I don't want to be down on the sidelines. I don't want to hear his noise. I want to be in my little cocoon listening and seeing what I see and sort of, making my calls from there in what is a comfortable environment. Clearly, him and Matt understand each other. He's like, yeah, I don't want to be down there. I don't want to hear Matt rah-rahing and cheering or screaming and, you know, telling us we have to do it better. I want to be away from that to do. I found that very, very enlightening.
And Andy, he called his place up in the press box, it's a workplace. It's a work environment. And that's what he was looking for. All right. That's it for quarter two. Coming up, your questions, we ask Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three. It's time for your questions. We get to ask Andy. Andy, right off the bat, I'm going to put you on the spot. Curious how you'll answer this. This comes from Tara in Altoona, who says, as much as Salty Andy is my favorite, I have a fun question for Andy and Jim. If Penn State built a Mount Rushmore outside Beaver Stadium, who would be your four faces and who would you leave off that would surprise people?
Mount Rushmore at Penn State. So is this just players or is this anybody?
Well, I've had time to think about this question. So I'm going to give you a little time to think. I'm going to stall a little bit here. I thought of that question in my head also because the one guy who absolutely positively has to be on it, if coaches are included, is Joe Paterno.
Correct. I agree. Joe Paterno has to be there.
I think the problem is after that, there's a lot of really good, deserving players to be on this, but picking three or four of them, I could make you a list of 12.
You could, but that's not what we were asked to do. Is it Tara correct. In Altoona? Is that what you
yes.
said?
Yes. Yes.
Good question, Tara. You said four, right? Tara said four. Okay, so Joe Paterno is one. I think you have to put John Cappelletti on there, right? Okay. You have to put your Heisman Trophy winner on there. I am going to take what I think is one of the most undervalued, even though he went on and played in the NFL, underrecognized players on what I think is probably, in my opinion, the best Penn State team, which was the 92. It's Kerry Collins. I think I put Kerry Collins on there. College Football Hall of Famer, Jimmy, right? Okay. So he's got College Football Hall of Fame, outstanding NFL career. I just thought he was so good at running an offense that was a little bit different than Joe liked to run, but it still was an offense that Joe liked to run, right? It was Joe and Fran's offense. So there's three. if for nothing else, gosh, there's so many places to go. NFL Hall of Famers, I mean, two, but I mean, Franco Harris is a Hall of Famer. I'm looking at players that would, so my guy that I would leave off that would surprise you is Franco Harris. Are you ready for the guy that I'm going to put on there for, I think he had two interceptions, Pete Kitopoulos. That team, that game, somebody has to be on it from that game and that team that year when they beat Miami, right? Didn't he have two picks in that game, Jimmy? Am I correct?
I'm not sure. I know he had the final one on the final play.
I swear to gosh, I think he had one more. Okay, don't come after me, Penn State fans, for having a 60-plus years of life memory. But I think he had two. That's just off the top of my bald head. It'd be off the top of yours. But I just think that game, that moment, the crescendo of that game, how it went down, to me, that's Mount Rushmore, so I'm leaving Franco off. That's my surprise that I left off. Great question, Tara.
Do you know what's fascinating to me, Andy, with all of this? And Capoletti was at or near or at the top of the list, except, and he won the Heisman Trophy, played on an undefeated team.
Franco was a better football player longer.
He's probably not the best running back.
But this is the Penn State. This is the Penn State.
No, I understand it.
Overall, Mount Rushmore.
But, you know, even while they were there, you know, Saquon, Lydell Mitchell, you know, you've got all of these other guys that you could.
I know.
Larry Johnson.
Larry Johnson Jr.
Capoletti had the, you know, his Heisman Trophy winning year. Larry Johnson probably had a better single season than John Capoletti did. If they both had those seasons the same year, I think you make Larry Johnson the Heisman winner, not John Capoletti.
So who are your four, Jimmy? Come on, you've had time to think about this. who's your one surprise you left off? I don't want to hear I've got 12. Tara said four.
I've got eight guys that I leave off that would be a surprise. But
Jimmy, four.
With all of that said, I wanted to spread it out a bit, you know, like a running back, a quarterback. So, yeah, I'm going to end up going with you with Capoletti.
Okay.
And if you ask me to rank running backs, he's probably about fifth. Okay.
Correct.
Quarterback, boy, that was tough. I'm tempted by Todd Blackledge winning the first national championship.
I like it.
A guy many people don't remember, Richie Lucas, 1959.
Yep.
Runner-up for the Heisman.
I agree.
I'm going to, just to be different, I'm going to say Blackledge as the quarterback. And you got to go on defense. How about Jack Ham?
Great one. Good call. Love it. Yeah, there's a lot of right answers to this. Who's the one surprising guy that's the top of your list that you left off? You look at it and go, man, I had to leave him off. One guy, one and one only, Jimmy.
And this is maybe my recency bias, which I don't typically have. I'll say Saquon.
Okay.
I thought he was just so special, but.
Yep.
All right, let's move on.
Great question.
Where should we go?
That means Jimmy's looking over the questions and trying to figure out which one he's going to ask.
Because we used up half the show already, or half this segment. Rob from Charlotte, he says, I've asked this on the show for the last three off seasons. Who do you foresee as your favorite player on each side of the ball for the upcoming year? Not necessarily the best, just a guy you love watching and how they play. Past call-outs were Hardy. Tyler Warren before his breakout year. I know those were names that I threw out there. Appreciate the show, and we are. So who are the guys that you're specifically looking forward to seeing?
Peoples, James Peoples at running back. And this one's a little bit more known, but I can't wait to see what Lynn does with him, Zion Tracy. I just think he can be a Swiss Army knife. I just think there's like nine things Lynn can do with him, including being a pass rusher. Jimmy, He can not line up a D end and be a pass rusher, but bring him as part of a pressure package. There's so many things you can do with that guy. I can't wait to see what Lynn, who's very unorthodox in his construction of aggressiveness. Not like Manny Diaz, the mad scientist, who was like, what in the God's creation is he doing? But Lynn's a little more stably constructing of it, but he's also very aggressive and is not afraid to take chances. So those are my two guys.
Well, I'll give you a couple, and I'll admit right off that this creates a bias for me. I told you earlier in the show, I've spoken to 20 of the players. Okay, you got a chance to interview them extensively. I now have a bias towards some of my favorite guys that I spoke to. And I admit it, that happens to me. One of the guys I'm fascinated by is Jeremiah Cooper. And it hits similar to your Zion Tracy pick, because he's a guy who has played safety, played cornerback, and as a safety, just like with Zion Tracy, he'll be able to move around the formation and do different things.
Okay.
So I'm fascinated by that, just like you were with Zion Tracy. On the offensive side of the ball, I wish I could just say tight end, Andy.
I know.
I'm always fascinated by him. So yep. Take your pick, Rapoulier, Burkle, Brommer. Put them in a hat and pick one of the names out, Andy, for me.
Okay, well, Rob asked for two, but go ahead, Jimmy. Break the rules. Do we have time for another one?
Yeah, let's sneak in. Rob from Burbank says, one possible explanation for Indiana's rise to national power is that some fan made a monkey paw wish for a championship, and the unintended consequence was Penn State's abysmal season. Have you ever heard, Andy, of a monkey paw wish?
No, never heard of it.
I had to look it up. Apparently, it essentially means you can wish for this, but there's another unintended consequence to it. Similar to, if you remember our buddy Steve, who said, would you trade your little toe for a national championship? Remember that question, Andy?
I kind of remember something about it. Of course, I'd be like, no.
Okay. His question is, yeah, same here. That said, what's your acceptable unintended consequence for a Penn State national championship on a monkey paw wish? For me, you know, I'm the Penn State fan. You are not. Substitute correct any team you want for a championship. Essentially, he's saying, what would you give up for, you know, your Tampa Bay Bucks or Philadelphia Flyers to win a championship?
Oh, for the Flyers to win the Stanley Cup, you can have my house. You can have it. I'm not tied to it. That I don't mind my house. Only ever had one house. We bought our first house intending to buy or build a second house and never really found a need for that. So 30 plus years in my house, you can have it.
Wow.
Yeah, you can have it.
That is a big one, Andy.
How's that for an answer, Jimmy? You can have my house. I have dreamed for decades of going to the celebration and parade down Broad and Patterson of the Philadelphia Flyers winning the Stanley Cup, because I was only 10 and 11 when they won the first two, and wasn't living in the United States, so I didn't really know all that much. And I didn't become a Flyers fan till after they won the cup, when I became a hockey fan. So I've spent the better part of four decades wishing that I could go to that parade. And I don't care how old I am, if I can able to move and walk and they win a Stanley Cup, I'm going. I've always said that. And you can have my house.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can't touch that, Andy, giving up your house for a championship. So that Fortunately for me, we're out of time for this segment, and I don't have to try to top it. We've got more to go, though, with quarter number four when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We were still in the break discussing Andy's willingness to give up his house. I asked him, what would be his wife's response? Andy just says, well, she'd be okay if I could buy her a house down in Florida. So that's the way that goes. I will add this, though, Andy. Any regular listener of our show knows that besides Penn State, I'm a big New York Mets fan. And one could say the Mets have won two championships in my lifetime. I was 9 years old in 1969, a new fan. Hey, I thought that's the way this worked. Had to wait till 1986 for the next one. It's 40 years later. I'm still waiting. And someone, a cynic somewhere, could say, Jim, that's your punishment. You got the championship in 1986. It means 40 years out in the desert without another championship. Not only without a championship, but you have to blow – you know, a division lead, a playoff chance. You got to do things that are just so excruciating, so painful. I think I've made the monkey paw agreement. All right, let's move on, Andy. We're talking about the other night, the Big Ten Network did their preseason show about Penn State. We were going over that, and I thought Taylor Mauser is a great interview, I believe. And he talked about a few things. He hit upon Rocco Beck and his connection to everybody on the team. Again, I think that's part of that leadership skill. He also talked about how he toughed it out last year. He had on his non-throwing arm, ended up with shoulder surgery after the season, but he played through that. He's a tough guy. And he now seems
compromised. Yeah.
Yeah. Bigger, better, stronger, healthy right now. I thought it was interesting, speaking of bigger, better, he talked about the difference in Big Ten defenses versus Big 12. Bigger, more stout, and there's an NFL structure to them, Andy.
Yeah, he knows. And I also found it interesting that they said, well, they feel at Penn State, which I kind of get, but we're not going to delve into it deep today, that the defense is ahead of the offense. And I'm like, man, they got so many pieces. But I understand that. But I think he knows the freedom with which they were able to run this offense in the Big 12 at Iowa State is going to be limited by Big 10 defenses. They are. They're going to take away those deep shots. They're not going to be as easy to set up. They're going to be harder. You're going to have to be executing at a high level, a higher level to make it work. There's more single corners that can cover you on an edge on an island. Play after play after play, right? They're more structurally sound. In other words, their plan, even if you think you have one that we can get them and we've got the guys to do it, the structure of the defenses is coordinated at a much higher level, that it's not going to be something that isn't going to take a little bit of special to execute for a team like Penn State. So he knows exactly what the challenges are that this offense is going to face. And he knows they're going to have their work cut out for them. They Rocco's got 39 games of experience. Yes, he's a solid quarterback. It's going to take him being a little bit extra special to pull some of this off if they want to do it like they want to do it. So, yeah, it was honest, brutally honest. Like, it's the one thing I think is the secondary national topic that, you know, sort of for this Penn State team beyond the schedule is, yeah, Iowa State and all these players, they could be explosive. They could be one that could dictate tempo. Let's see how they do it against more consistently team, you know, stronger defenses. That's sort of the secondary thing that goes along with this Penn State team in terms of national topic. Can this offense be what it needs to be to keep them in, to win them football games? And it is a fair question.
It is. And I think I'm glad there's that self-awareness that it's not a case just to enhance what you're saying, Andy, is maybe in the Big 12, you see, okay, there's a formation set up. I could create a one-on-one situation on my wide receiver, and I think my guy's going to win.
Yep.
Well, it's not quite as obvious in the Big 10 that your guy could win that one-on-one, because that DB you're up against is probably running a 4-3, you know, so your guy's not just going to scoop by him.
Yep. I 100% agree that this offense has some serious challenges ahead of it. I think they have some of the pieces to provide answers to those questions, but the pieces have to be performing at, just say, one small step better than you've seen or known from them in the past. I mean, we like the running backs. I like the running back room. I think there's a lot of versatility there. If they're struggling against Big Ten competition, that's going to be a big problem, right? Like, if they're struggling at the second level, if the offensive line isn't, you know, able to block well, there's a lot in that running back room, but they're going to need a little help, and they can't do it on their own. And that's sort of football cliche, but the playing field's just more level. It's a more level playing field.
The other thing that Mauser mentioned, and it stood out to me because we had also heard Matt Campbell last week in a local media press conference talked about running plays, catering to his talent, not saying, hey, this is how we do it, make the players adjust to that. But as coaches, they should adjust to the talent they have. And Mauser talked about running plays that the players are confident in. And I really like that because I think sometimes we did not see that over the last couple of years. It was the coaches forcing their will onto the players, onto the offense. Correct. I think we saw it last year even on the defense.
Correct.
And these coaches are making a point of saying, we're going to accentuate the strengths of our players.
Yeah, I think so. When it was Iowa State and the Big 12 and this coaching staff, I think less wasn't more. More was more, right? Like, the more you can confuse and throw at a defense, the better chance you have of success. I think it's the complete opposite at this level in the Big 10. And I think Taylor recognizes that. Less is more. The less we do, the more chance we have for success. If we try and do more, it's actually going to be less because they're going to shut us down. Because if we try and throw a whole bunch of stuff at them, they're too good. He already said they're too good. They're bigger, stronger, faster, and they're structurally sound. Less is more. More, trying to do more would actually be less.
And now, just going over to the Danton Lynn interview.
62 questions.
You know, he gave short answers, but I thought it was interesting. And he was asked about, he didn't just select Penn State now as a coach. He selected Penn State as a player. And he went back to then and said, again, he used that word culture. But I thought even more interesting was, and old-time Penn State fans, I think we like hearing some of those names from the past. He talked about Tom Bradley being a major influence for him.
Yeah. It's one thing that we talked about, even going back to when, you know, there was a coach opening at Penn State. It is a niche, unique job because it's different. It's hard to quantify and identify it, but it is. He chose it as a player, and he chose it as a coach. And I think to this day, and I think now, I think Scrapp's got, I think, you know, he leans into him, right? He leans into what he taught him. He leans into how he coached him. And now that he's the one doing that, why would he stop leaning into him? So the way Tom Bradley let players be themselves is something that I think Lynn has latched onto big time. And Tom was really good at it. Now, some would say that Tom was a roll the footballs out kind of defensive guy and just let them freewheel and do what they want. Maybe a little bit, but the devil in the, I think what gets lost about Tom Bradley as a defensive coordinator, the devil in the details were never left unturned. That allowed him to be that roll out the football and let the guys be what they be. And I think that's something that Lynn learned as a player and has grasped and held on to as something that's a high value proposition for him as a coach. And particularly now as the Penn State defensive coordinator.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say it's the blended again. We go back to this being a blended family, blending a little bit of old with something new, borrowing a little bit of something and make it blue, right? Like, I think that is exactly what Lynn is leaning into as Penn State's new defensive coordinator.
And the one, you know, obvious difference, and we were aware of this, it's been talked about, he's looking for size at defensive tackle. It's a new day. And this is from a guy in Danson Lynn who the last couple of years has been coaching in the Big Ten at UCLA, USC. Correct. And he wants that size at defensive tackle.
Not only did he say they went out and got it intentionally, with purpose, and it was clearly his number one priority. He said, we have to recruit the position differently as well. In other words, these are our stop gaps, and we are starting over at this position completely and holistically, structurally, as a program, with me as a DC at this position, and we need to recruit it differently.
And the other part to that equation, Andy, and I got this from Cam Smith, one of the linebackers. I was asking him about the size on the defensive line, and he said, okay, we saw those guys coming in, but it wasn't until spring practice when we saw how it worked, which was they maintain things at the line, but now at linebacker, that will allow us to be attackers. Our first step is forward, not backwards.
They're space occupiers. They want him to they want those guys to occupy space. End of sentence.
All right, that's going to be the last word. Thank you, Andy, and thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you come back next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.